Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another weekly installment here at Your Remedy is in the Law. Tonight, we're discussing a most important aspect in law, which we'll get into in a moment. My name is Michael Edward. I'll be your moderator and your host. And tonight, GW will be joining us live on this conference call, which is brought to you by YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, which is in direct affiliation with AmericansRestoringAmerica.com. Before we get started with this evening, though, it's very important I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing you hear on this call tonight may in any way, shape, or form be deemed by you to be legal advice, financial advice, or even advice for the love lorn. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business being here, not on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or a member of the state bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you legal advice. Should you require legal advice, it's my suggestion to you, not advice, just a suggestion, find an attorney, someone in your state that is sanctioned to give legal advice in law. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes only. Just people saying what they might do or they similarly situated to you and your particular situation. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just here to get opinions from the different folks about what you might do where they similarly situated to you. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. It's always up to you to do your own due diligence. And when I say how educated they are, many of the information providers here have graduated law school, and many of them have taken the state bar, passed the state bar, and simply said no thank you to becoming a member of the state bar or a licensed, if you would use that expression, attorney or lawyer. So on the next subject, let's go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. First of all, I'll take you to the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com. Look in the upper right-hand corner where you'll see a picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and then a separate place will come up with just two items on it. These two items are certainly most important to you, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is a 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known as American Jurisprudence, or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation and structure upon which the law of America rests and how it's navigated. So as to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means that you have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in any virtually any court scenario that you may find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, nationally known for its high win in traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. However, that is not really why it's on this page. The reason we have the common law default process up here with the jurisdictionary course is that when you go through this course, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it's a kind of like a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing an action. So this is a good way to navigate that action. Folks seem a little more willing to take their first step, probably because of such a high success rate in traffic scenarios being such a common problem in this country today. The common law default process, although known for traffic purposes, has many other remedy applications for most scenarios that you find yourself in where there is no damage to property or person. It's just some government official claiming you've broken their rule. Therefore, you must pay a civil penalty. And both of these items are very reasonably priced, the jurisdictionary course with a contribution of $250 and the common law default process for a contribution of $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, you're probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you're met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue onto the sites you were visiting or to stay and visit Americans Restoring America and look around. The reason that we're doing this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects as well as many other features and study groups that are at Your Remedy is in the Law. YourRemediesInTheLaw.com is just one of a couple of dozen plus websites that altogether comprise under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. Should you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, simply email me at mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com or call 800-625-4250, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we are able. Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's the map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables you to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topic of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. It's actually a very easy setup, you know. Continue here, click there, you know, put your zip code here, click next, that sort of thing. Then the assistant will walk you through the remainder of the setup. Now, you will get to a point where it will ask you what your interests are. Well, what are you interested in? This could range from credit card issues, home foreclosures, IRS matters, asset protection, maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of that is it affects your personal life, as it affects your personal life in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's relatively close enough to it to work. When the setup is complete, the software puts it all together much like you would think of a social network. Not that it is a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. It then puts you in contact with people in your local venue that have common interests to you, people you would never have met otherwise. You found them here, anonymously. They found you simply because you're both members of Americans Restoring America and you share a common interest in a particular subject. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. Imagine were you to go to a county council meeting alone, your newfound friend or friends agree with your particular standing on an issue, they show up with you. Now, this is not just 6 or 8 or 10 people showing up. This can be tens or even hundreds easily. And on really important, passionate issues, it can go into the thousands. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go discuss the matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions with people that were like-minded, well, you can do that through this program. You jump online one day and say, well, this happened to me today. So the first person shows up and says, well, I don't like that. I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, it's sympathetic and all, but it's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And then the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these specific terms. You'd be surprised what you think they mean and what they actually do mean in law. And then maybe the next person says, well, that all sounds great, but there's also this particular website you should check out and these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then you can go and do some of your own due diligence on what you're reading. It just amounts to people offering suggestions, people's opinions to each other. But if you just do your due diligence and educate yourself, maybe the further you get into it, you'll discover it's not all that difficult as you initially thought it would be because you focused on one single subject and you get to a point where you've investigated the matter yourself and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that, and that's all we're trying to do here at Grassfire Communications. It becomes very simple to get people to start talking again amongst themselves. And, of course, there is no cost to you for using Grassfire Communications, either signing up or the regular use of it. And so we're hopeful you'll pass this around. If that is not an option for you today, then there's Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road and you don't want to deal with the vent card process, et cetera, for the purchases. Your remedy is in the law, and you don't have your username and password, so you can't see the phone number or the PIN. So, by the way, if you pick up a membership at yourremediesinthelaw.com, it's very simple. It's very easy. You simply click the register button, and there's your basic information. You enjoy the first 30 days for free evaluating it. You're not even asked for your credit card or debit card at the point of registering. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your bank card or your PayPal. Did you know every single call is recorded? There are years of archives to go through. There's a very vast wealth of knowledge there, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, live. And if for whatever reason we are unable to do a call that night, illness, things happen, you know, there was an accident, whatever, there's a recording that will be played. So you're never there without having your entertainment. There's also the question box there where you can type in a question at Freedoms Radio. You click submit as long as it's within certain call hours, and your written question will pop up on the moderator screen that I look at, and we'll do our best to read every single one of these questions out over the years, as long as they're appropriate. So you don't get to talk directly with the information provider like you would by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered, and there's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio. So no matter where you are and whatever your circumstances are, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so let's wind down from here. I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, your buyer beware. Your remedies in the law is under the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. When you come aboard, you go with an information provider, and you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider, along with many other expenses that might be associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would never be able to find on your own, just simply because they can't be found unless you are just that. Information providers pay for advertising at your remedies in law. So, of course, if you're one of these alphabet agencies, well, you can find us then. That's not a problem. So then we make these introductions. Now, not all teaching efforts by the information providers are always going to be successful. Everyone always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. Unfortunately, bad things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to wrestle with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in your life. Again, we also want to emphasize the intent. The intent is always to be successful, and we have the tools to be successful. If you have any questions about that, we welcome you to visit yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds, the refund policy. There is none. Not at Your Remedies in the Law, anyways, of course. When you call in, you go with a particular information provider that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. There must be extreme and extenuating circumstances. You're expected to have done your due diligence before committing to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining to all the information providers at Your Remedies in the Law, we've got to remind everyone that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that the speaker has to say, that's fine. That's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But please, you must always be civil. The question you pose, if posed properly, then it will be answered properly. And then so we all can learn something from it. All right, well, that's my rant for this evening. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over to our speaker's host this evening, which is me, Michael Edward. And now I'll be looking for GW because he's going to be here tonight, and he's not here yet. I'm going to send him a quick text, say something like, hey, you're on. We're here. We're waiting. Send. so he should be dialing in any second. Let me just give you the 30,000-foot view while we wait for GW to arrive. We have been, for the last two, 3 months, going over and through a book that you can find at http://www.americanbybirth.com. Now, you have to go through the HTTP process today, but that'll be rectified soon, where you just type in AmericanByBirth.com and off at the top. But what you'll learn, what you'll find at AmericanByBirth.com is two PDFs that you can download, print if you like, or just read online. And the first PDF is, and I encourage you to read it not once or twice, I encourage you to read it half a dozen times before you proceed to the next one. And the reason for it is because it is so incredibly intense. It's only 22 pages, but it is intense with court case after court case after court case, and then dialogue drawing, tying them together, connecting the dots that show you clearly that there are two governments operating here, south of Canada and north of Mexico. And one of those governments is a guaranteed republic form of government. The other one claims to be a democracy. However, it really operates more as an oligarchy. The former, you have constitutional rights. The latter, you have civil rights. And just there's so much to it. So it's really important that you read, "Once We Were Colonists, Subject to a King, a Primer on Jurisdiction." And after you've read that a half a dozen times, then we encourage you to then read The Greatest Story Never Told. And The Greatest Story Never Told is authored by a gentleman that I met a little over a decade ago. And he is the foundation of my understanding and learning of these two classes of citizenship. And a third party, not a citizen, And don't guffaw me here, but royalty, the name of a sovereign, occupying the position analogous to other sovereigns in the family of nations, the first definition of the United States. The very people that founded this country share co-sovereignty with one another. And it's this co-sovereignty that has been delegated, not given away, delegated to the state government and the federal government to operate through. Anyways, we have GW here tonight. I'm excited about this. This is his once-a-month visit, and we're going to be very thrilled as to the things that we're going to learn. Hey, GW, how have you been this past month or so? 2 months now, it has been.
It's been 2 months, yeah. Yeah. I've been good, been busy. Things are alive and lively and everything else, watching the world events, watching what's going on here in America, watching the Republic, good people in the Republic fighting the oligarchs in the on the democracy side, so to speak, the Roman civil law side, which what this call is all about, understanding the two, the how to correct the situation, at least for ourselves, you know, those of us who have corrected our status and standing for many, many years, like Michael has, like I have, almost 17 years ago, like Brother John did, almost 30 years ago. We've got a little bit more, experience in the realm of understanding this the stupidity that's going on and how they've basically pulled the curtain over our eyes. And those of us that are looking at the man, you know, running the show behind the curtain, just it's so nice when you get to that point and you lose the fear of this crazy movie we're watching. Just like, what's happening with oh, the ramp up to this, the election that's coming up here, and all the candidates that are posturing and positioning. And you got the star of the show, the mega keen, Donald Trump, which is awesome. And you got, then you have the, the democracy, Nikki Haley, or if you want to use her real name, it's Nimrata. Can you imagine that, Michael? Her real name is Nimrata. Nimrod.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
I caught that when I saw that.
Yeah, I wouldn't want that name either.
She's not American born. She's not a native born.
No, you're right. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, she's her both of her parents, I believe, are from India, and I could be wrong. Could be, but I think it's India. But yeah, half of all her supporters are Democrats that are supporting her, and big, huge Democrat, you know, donors and everything else. But anyway, we're watching a lot of craziness out here, but it's kind of fun when you understand that we win in the end. That's for sure. But yeah, I've been good. How things been for you, Michael?
Well, I've been taking these last 2 or 3 months and reading from each week, reading a chapter from the greatest story never told, and it's really been an eye-opening experience for the listeners, particularly, but for myself as well. Having the opportunity to be reminded again of things that you know, it's like when you go through the Bible and you're reading scriptures and you go, I don't remember that. And then all of a sudden, you know, things start clicking. And so it's been really good. It's been exciting.
Awesome. All right. Well, hopefully we have some, maybe we have some newbies here that are on the line and are interested more about what is going on here. I my days are filled with people that are, you know, that have either have corrected their status or they're looking to correct their status. Deal with two people today with it. In fact, one lady is doing her entire family, kids, everybody, and then another a dentist who is wanting to get him and his wife out of the system. And then just dealt with a couple from just had a 15-year employment with the DOD. They've just correct their status and did their revocation of election and a number of other things all at the same time to get themselves straight. And it just keeps on growing and growing. More and more people are starting to really realize that, you know.
In the last 2 months of application of this interfacing with law enforcement or anything like that? Any of those stories?
Nothing dramatic that I can. Nothing. Last 2 months, maybe three. About 3 months ago, I had one of my clients that was basically got his whole. In fact, he got his whole family done, and his kids, except for his wife. His wife, she didn't want to do it, but all of his kids, he was out. Driving somewhere in Texas and got pulled over. The cop was just being real idiot. You know, the thing that we don't control as, you know, having everything in place, okay, having your ID card, which is your state-issued, not state-issued, but Secretary of State-issued card, which he had,
and using it and trying to get the cop to, you know, use it in the correct way. And he did pretty much everything right. It's just that sometimes cops are just real jackasses. So, presented it. They wouldn't even run the card. And, instead, they ran his name. Took the card, but they ran his name. They didn't put the card into the system. And they found where there was a driver's license, and that's one of the capacities they have. They can find out if you have a driver's license. And so they went that route, issued him a ticket, court date, the whole bit. So, of course, calls me right after, hey, what can I do? So luckily we got a legal team that jumped right on it and did a presumptive letter. And pretty much that was it. It went pretty fast from that point where they dismissed everything and everything fell away. But sometimes you'll need that. Sometimes, you know, we have these dramatic stories, these real fun stories over years and years of people presenting their status correction of their card, and it works out well, and the cops, you know, will actually run it. They'll actually give input back sometimes and say, well, what the heck is this? Sometimes you'll get that, but then you got to realize there's some idiots out there and they don't train these guys. And sometimes you need a little bit more backup than that. And I know Michael has people that he can hand you off to also, that can do a good enough job, with presentments to courts and things like that, you know, in case you run into that. But for the most part, we always get some pretty good testimonies and some good reactions and everything else. But of course, for a lot of people, and I'll say this over and over again, for the most of the people that contact me, especially through the Portuguese law firm, when they're sent to me, they're thinking about renouncing their citizenship in the United States of America, and they're trying to do it through a foreign embassy, and you know, that's a very grisly task to go through, because the reason these people are doing it is because they've been wrongly told, and I have to say that they're not given all the information. They've sought out help, and usually it's in the form of some kind of attorney, licensed attorney. And that licensed attorney, they'll say, hey, I mean, this, the number one thing that they're talking about is, how do I escape this global taxation? You know, I mean, I'm not even living there in America, and I'm earning money, and I'm doing this, that, the other thing in foreign countries, and they still want to partner with me, that, you know, these sick people that think that I owe them money. And the attorney will usually tell them, well, the only avenue you have is to, you know, renounce your citizenship and go to a foreign country, do it, and get a, you know, some kind of another passport, and there you go. Well, that's one way, and it's a very kind of disturbing way to do it, because even though it can seem kind of exotic to go to another country and get citizenship and renounce your U.S. citizenship, you're paying a couple hundred thousand dollars for that right there. And on top of that, if you have assets in your own name that you haven't arranged your affairs yet, okay, like Judge Learnedhan said, if you haven't done that yet, you're going to be paying a huge price on because you have to sell everything that's in your all-cash name, and then you have to pay a hefty exit tax on that. So that is the number one question, of course, with almost everybody that comes up, is that how can I escape this? You know, well, how do I deal with this? And it's like, okay, well let's – well, there's things that can be done, you know. There's step one, step two, step three. There's a number of things that can be done to extract you out of that real pervasive overwhelming system of, you know, certain entities wanting, you know, to gouge you and bill you for large amounts of money. So forget where I was going there, but that's probably the number one consideration with, going about the status correction, is that that's the number one thing that, you know, really helps a lot. It puts you in a lot better place to be able to prevail and win in certain scenarios in that arena. But for the most part, what we do here, you know, on this call that we've had over the past few years, is that this is all about correcting your status from a U.S. citizen to an American national. We like using that term, American national, because it is actually identified at 8 U.S.C., which is Title 8, and it's at subsection 1502, where it's stating that the Secretary of State can, on certain information, can certify somebody as an American national. And so that term right there is one of the terms we like to use, and it seems to work, and it's one of the only times you'll see that actually in print in their statutes. And I know some people, I know some real purists out there have a real hard time. That's in their statutes. You know, that's they own that. That's in their statutes. Well, I guess you could say yes and no at the same time, because they're recognizing a capacity that basically they're saying they don't have a whole lot of jurisdiction over. And if you're going to be recognized, I mean, it's kind of the same way when we people go through the process of getting their financial structures in place, especially those that are done by Bernie Beshears on the Saturday call. I imagine you still have that. You're using, yes, you're using the things that are written in the code, but the cool thing about that is you're putting yourself into a capacity, you're putting the entity, and you're operating in a capacity where they recognize that they have very, very limited authority over that. And that's the place you want to be. You want to be in a place where, you know, that's kind of a life's goal for me, is to find out all the different places where the remedies are available, and that you have the least amount of controls over your life from those that are constantly out there wanting to control your life, which is really that left side of the chart, you know, with all the statutes, regulations, codes, and you know, where they're saying that well, if you do this, then, you know, even though the Constitution says you can do it, well, you know, if you're, we say you can't, especially if you're a U.S. citizen. So anyway, this is what this call is about, is correcting your status with the U.S. State Department, the number one agency in the land that has jurisdiction over passports and the assignment of passports. And so we do it through a number of different activities of getting people into, you know, once their paperwork is established and corrected and it's looks good, then getting an appointment, getting an actual day that you're going to be able to go in and present your paperwork and get that passport. Hopefully most people are doing it through what we call a fast passport process, which is an urgent passport, where you actually walk into a State Department facility, which only happens when you have kind of an urgent situation, like you have a flight that's leaving the country within about 14 days, and you make that appointment, and you're able to get in there and do a brand new passport application and get the information corrected that same day and get the passport card. And so that's what we do on this call. So maybe we want to, Michael, we want to open it up to some people that want to ask questions. And
sure.
And
sounds like a good idea. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2 to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, you'll notice a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side somewhere about the center right of your monitor. Left-click into that, type away your comment or question. Underneath that silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Once you've done that, hit submit, and then it pops up on my end, and I'll be more than happy to lend my voice to your comment or question. Again, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. I want to remind you all and that the reason that GW had made a change in his plans from doing weekly calls like he had done for a couple of years is that he got to a point where nobody was asking questions. And, you know, kind of like him saying to himself, what am I doing here? So, you know, you need to press star 2 on that keypad, otherwise we might go for 2 months before we hear from him again. Anyways, the next date that we have for that would be February 26th is the last Monday of February. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, I'll thank GW for joining us this evening for his update and say goodnight. We don't want to do that. While you're thinking about it, I'm going to go check Freedom's Radio real quick. Let me give that a moment to populate. Dum-dum-dum. Oh, got a good crowd there, too. Oh, Ed. Hello, Mr. Ed. The famous Mr. Ed.
Hello.
Oh, boy.
Well, I'm not the famous one, but the anyways, I have a question.
Ed.
Hey. I thought that, hi, GW.
Mm-hmm.
I had thought from my formerly listening in here, that my status of American national would work itself down through all the ranks of the government, rank and file, and I think that it did not, or something else happened. I heard from a U.S. The Department of Agriculture, I think. Is that the department? I think it is. We heard from them about they want to know if I want to get food stamps and the Medicare and all that kind of stuff. And I have Medicare along with my Social Security, of course. But someone had checked off the square that I'm a U.S. citizen on one of the boxes in there, and I kind of scribbled that out. I still don't know that I'm going to turn it in. I think I should probably as an answer. And is the right thing to do to send in my affidavit? Would that be about right?
I would. Absolutely.
Yeah. I never got the passport. I don't hardly travel. I go across the street to the woods. I go across a trail to the woods, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to get better from the train wreck, so I'm kind of behind on things here from where I would normally be.
Train wreck?
Yeah, there was a train wreck up here in East Palestine, Ohio, back on February 3rd.
Yeah.
Up on the one-year anniversary date, sick and tired of it. Was like, anyone wonder why I didn't want to be a U.S. citizen? Here comes the EPA out. They helped to clean up the environment and make sure they were bragging about $1 million fine on a $1 billion company and just stuff like that. They stand in the way after the railroad for damages.
You weren't on the train, right?
Wasn't on the train. I thought I was escaping the harm done by all the chemicals that leaked off that train. Got into the water supply, got into the air, and just thought I was escaping it. I was cutting wood on the side of a hill one time. They lifted up the rails of the tracks. The railroad, first thing it did was get the train off of the tracks and get its rails laid down again and started running trains through there again. Told people it was safe, they could all move home again. And it is just pathetic. They lifted the rails. I was down here 6 miles away. Suddenly the stuff is in the air. I start coughing, and I was down for a week, like with a real serious acute bronchitis or whatever it was. And I just... And the beat goes on. We still get... Now the EPA is saying it's basically cleaned up. And the stuff drifts on up down to the valleys and everything. And we still get lots of dirty air that sends you into a day of coughing and 2 days of diarrhea. It's all chemical damage. And there's all kinds of people that continue to suffer from it. And there's those that don't either, but not everyone is different that way. Everyone's got different things going on in their bodies. But my thing right now, I had to have the medical card for all the stuff going on. But I don't want that. I don't use their medicines. When they came out with the spike protein, and now they're putting in your store bought meat, they can put it into lettuce, all this kind of stuff. And I don't want to have anything to do with them. So I gotta turn my affidavit in, and I think I might have to go for a passport, try that again, and we'll go from there.
Okay.
I had an incident in court with my dog. My dog went after someone else's dog. I got prosecuted, and the judge made a decision against me. I told him I wasn't his subject. And he said, well, Pennsylvania gives me jurisdiction over you. I didn't want to beggar her up too much because my dog did something serious in breaking another dog up. My dog is a real lovable dog with everyone but this one guy and his dog. I don't figure out people, even less so dogs, but, you know, I paid the fine and let it go. And if I wanted to keep my dog, otherwise I probably could have lost the dog. But I sit here and observe and observe and observe. And I'm getting sick of it, and I'm moving towards being healthier. I got both my lungs working again. Not whole, but they're working. I need something to do. I may as well tend towards trying to prosecute other people. Go after them when they come. And I'm curious, too. I got a 1099 out there from the money I put into the bank, and I think that will that require me to volunteer the form to the IRS that is what the hangs are called again? The non-resident alien status?
Oh, yeah, the W-8-B-E-N?
8-B-E-N, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Should I just send that to them, or should I just wait for them to tell me they don't have anything? They missed my return.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, whatever they send to you.
Yeah. Well, they won't send anything to me until they don't get anything from me.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you can meet him with that.
Of course.
Yeah, well, I would look at it.
Go ahead.
I would keep that W-8B in with the affidavit attached to it, and once they send something, now you have somebody and an address to send it back to.
Okay, that works.
Yep.
That would work.
Yep.
That was probably what I was looking for in terms of what step do I want to send it to them. Because they have a habit of, they like those, their round file. That file they have in the same shape of a circle appears to be bottomless. But that's what I'll do in that case. Those are the two things going on in my life. I lost pretty much everything here. I guess I was required to get word to make the documents for Bernie, and so I still don't like Microsoft and company, Bill Gates. As soon as I downloaded that in there, they said I had all kinds of Word documents without a license to have Word. So I've bought all kinds of licenses over the years. Over 15 years, I've had 3 licenses. But I didn't have them on that computer and didn't know I was supposed to. I lost whole computers and a hard drive. And they just... Now, I'm thinking it was them because it didn't show up until they showed up. The damage didn't show up until they showed up. And I guess some of that stuff, it looks like I can't get back. I try to get into some of the stuff this evening that has all the archives. I couldn't get into them. I don't have a record of what my name was on Your Remedy Is in the Law. Just all this stuff. And so I've been just sitting ho-hum and figuring, well, I'm glad I came in tonight. You're here. I would wonder where you went if you hadn't been here. It's been that long.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm glad you
are. Couple months.
I'm glad you are.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, that's all I got.
Well,
I'll let you go here.
Okay.
Maybe there's someone.
Well, thank
else.
You for your comments, Ed. I appreciate you very much.
All right.
GW, any closing comments for the evening?
No more hands raised.
No more hands raised. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Well.
Don't want to go through a beg me here, but if we don't have anything, we're gonna let GW go, and it'll be another month before we hear from him. Here we go. Charlie writes in on the back end of Freedom's Radio. Can you give an update on the Old Glory Bank or any of the banking that you were talking about from Texas? Have multiple folks been able to open Corporation Sol or CRT accounts, especially given the feds now are asking banks to screen accounts to tag, you know, terrorists, people who, you know, purchase ammo and stuff like that. And again,
yeah, I would say, Old Glory Bank is definitely a place where you want to, you know, a great option where you want to try to be. I think the very first charitable religious trust was opened by one of my clients. Name is Zach. He's in Oklahoma there, but he never actually even had to go into the branch. Everything was done online. And he said it was pretty easy to get the charitable religious trust done at Old Glory Bank. And one of the things that you're going to want to have when other than the four, you know, if you're gonna if you're a client of Michael and Bernie's and you have your four documents that you're really going to need. I always tell people, you know, all my clients know this, you know, keep those. There's four documents you keep
in a folder with you in case you ever, you know, go to a bank, you ever want to open up a bank account. The first one, of course, is the Blue Border Trust Certificate, for sure, okay, that you either print up online or the one that, that Bernie sends you. And either one will do. I've hardly ever been asked for the original. Had anybody say that they were turned down because they needed the original, you know. And then you need the acceptance of appointment of trustee document that's officially notarized and you know has all the information on it. Then you need another document, which is the W-9, correctly filled out with all of its exemptions and everything else filled out and your signature on there. And then you need the CP575E, which is the document that you procure from the IRS, which is, has the EIN number and all the information about the trust and whatnot. So you need those four documents. But then if you're going to do it online with Old Glory, you've got to have one more document, and that is the successor trustee. So whatever successor trustee you're going to put in place, you know, whoever that is, it doesn't need to be a notarized document. It's just a document that says who it is. They just have to have that for their information. So those things are what you need, and it take you through the process. Hello?
Yeah. Nicholas just raised his hand, and I unmuted him. I didn't know he had your background comment.
Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Yeah.
Just go ahead.
I just had a question about, like, using a driver's license to drive for a business that I would like to work for and or getting a CDL, and if either one would affect my status, particularly because of the religious exemption. That was me.
You mean signing up for so getting employment with a company that's going to allow you to, you know, service them and drive for them. Of course, you know, any company out there is going to ask you for a valid driver's license because they're not going to, you know, the problem is working for a corporation of any kind. Okay, that's going to do this kind of stuff, Nicholas, is that they're already, okay, they're already somewhat compromised. I'm not trying to say that's a evil thing or anything. They're just already compromised because they're in the public, okay? You're interfacing between the private and the public here. And so that's on the public side. And so you're going to have to comply with the contract that they have with their insurance carriers and of course the licensing agents and everything else with that company so that you can be able to be in a commercial position to, you know, drive the car and carry the merchandise and then of course get paid. So does that in any way negate your status as a national? No, it doesn't. Okay. Because there's no way probably that you're going to be able to prevail in securing that position with that company by stating, even giving them your driver's license, but say, hey, listen, I'm an American national and I'm not, all these things don't apply to me. They're going to probably look at you sideways and that'll probably be the end of that conversation. But Michael, were you wanting to pop in on that?
Yeah, I was just going to say WW Cargill Company versus State of Minnesota, 180 US 452, quote, the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States.
Right. So for you, Nicholas, for you, no, there's no problem for you, okay, whatsoever. Although the company itself, you know, they're going to be the ones that are the enforcers on this. You know, the company that you're trying to get a contract with, you know, as an employee. So, you know, it's just something you got to look at. You know, what are the benefits, and you know, you got to weigh what that looks like, and say, well, you know, is it worth it? And if it's worth it, you know, and you say, yeah, it'll be some good paychecks. It'll be some, you know, be able to put some good money in the bank or whatever, you know, and you might want to do it.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I was going to add was, if I'm not mistaken, it's also, you know, I would have access to both worlds, per se. You know, I heard some other calls talking about how people still had access to, you know, their Roth IRA or whatever accounts, and potentially Social Security assistance, and, like, you know, that it's not exclusive per se once you correct your status, but more inclusive.
Yeah, you don't lose. Yeah, you don't. You know, when you correct your status, you don't lose in any way, shape, or form any of your Social Security benefits or your ability to collect those benefits at the proper time. Okay, it's just that, you know, you got to understand something. When at the proper time, when they actually have you filling out the paperwork to collect Social Security, you got to go through that hoop. Also, when you are at that age to collect it, they're going to put you through some interesting paperwork, and part of that paperwork that it has you signing is that it has you listed and checking a box that says that you're an indentured servant.
Yeah.
It actually has you listed as an indentured servant. You know, things like that, you know. So anyway, they try to capture every different which way. And even though, yes, you got to sign that paperwork as an indentured servant, that's for that specific situation, which is collecting the benefits that you've paid into in that account over a period of years. And of course, you know, after 10 years of paying Social Security, or 40, I think they call it 40 quarters or 10 years, you're actually at that point, the actual administration says that you never have to pay in again to receive benefits at that point. You're vested. That's right. You're vested in the system at that point of 10 years of paying Social Security, or 40 quarters. It doesn't mean that you're going to get the highest amount. You know, you're going to qualify to get the highest amount when you collect. It's just that you're vested at 10 years, even if you don't pay anything in after that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and then the only other part or question that I would have is, you know, I'm still kind of confused on, you know, I understand the, you know, Social Security number, Mark of the Beast, whatever, is their number that they prescribe, and it never necessarily goes away, and it's on their side. However, I'm not sure how that would, because, you know, a lot of places require a Social Security number to do anything, and, you know, like, you can't really just leave the box blank. So, I mean, like, even just filling out applications, like, they won't even let you continue without it. So I was just curious if that's, like, you know, should stay away from even bringing up that number, or if it's, like, you know, okay.
Nicholas, it just depends on your on what you want to accomplish. You know, where do you want to go? What do you want to accomplish? So if you're going to stay on the private side, okay, and I'll tell you a little story. I exited out of the system back in pretty much 1979. And I think And then I used the Social Security number only up until about 1984. And then I didn't anymore. And I didn't, because I pretty much at that point had enough of everything and said, I don't care if it kills me. I'm going to work for myself. I'm going to create my own businesses. I'm not going to look back. I don't, you know. So from that time forward, I was, not using it for anything. And so about 1990 came around, and I was I took on a partner who was very, very. She was good at what she did. And she was good at computers, and I wasn't at the time. I didn't even own a computer. And so that was pretty early on in the days of when, you know, computers were becoming more of a household thing. I mean, it was pretty, you know, that's pretty early on, the adapters of using computers. But we were buying a very sophisticated computer that did productions, did presentations up on big screens. And so she worked for the state revenue service in Arizona. And anyway, she said to me one day, she knows my background and was really, you know, enthralled with that. And she was a skip tracer. I mean, she found people that were out of the system and trying to hide. And so that's what they called that kind of a job back then. I don't know if they do it now, but anyway, she was able to find, you know, had all the computer systems and everything at her work to be able to find. She says, "Oh, so you?" She goes, "You think you're pretty good, huh? You know, with what you've done, and you know, being out of the system." And I was like, "Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, I've done what I've done." She says, "Well, give me your Social Security number, and I'm going to look you up." I said, "Okay." So gave it to her. About 3 days later, she popped back up and says, "Well, because I first want to tell you that, you know, I've gotten awards and I'm doggone good at my job, okay?" And then she looked at me and she says, "But you're better." And she goes, "You don't exist according to our system." But the thing is, about that scenario is that if you want to, you know, if you really want to kind of be in a place where you're more stealth and you kind of don't exist in their system, you're barely traceable, it's going to be a process of not putting that number down on documents for all kinds of different things and services and everything else. That's why, you know, part of the total, you know, the clients I work with, part of the total package that I help people to, you know, get into and start operating in is that they can, you know, get their bank accounts, they can get their brokerage accounts, and they can have these things in place without having a Social Security number that is being reported by that bank on a 1099 to the IRS. Because, you know, the cool thing about having the 508C1A and all the different structures in that in the 508C1A is that you never have to worry. I mean, I had a client call me up the other day and they said, "Well, they sent out the 1099s from the bank on the trust accounts." I'm like, "Yeah, okay. Well, is there anything I should be concerned with it?" You know, I'm like, "Absolutely not." You know, I said, "Absolutely not. That's a normal thing for the bank to do, and all the IRS can do with it is put it in the round can." So, you know, Nicholas, you want to think about your life from the public and the private side, and you want to, you know, sometimes it is a situation where you want to analyze what are the benefits and what are the downfalls, and is it, you know, do I really want to really need this? Do I really want to do this? You know?
Yeah.
Whatever it is, you know, you're the one that has to make that decision in your life and what you want and how you want to move going forward. and how you want to create your life. And it's all kind of a plan ahead of time, you know, and making good decisions.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess, like, I'm assuming then if I already had a pre-existing bank account set up before I corrected my status and then I was still using that, I'm guessing they'd still report with having that
security
number.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So I guess I should probably look at getting rid of that as soon as I can. But appreciate all your wisdom and info.
Okay, I want to springboard off of something that you said, Nicholas, earlier about the two sides of things. Remember, you did read Once We Were Colonists, right?
Yeah, several times, but I'm still reading it more.
That's okay. In Cruikshank, United States versus Cruikshank, 92 U.S. 542, it says, quote, "It is the natural consequence of a citizenship which owes allegiance to two sovereignties and claims protection from both. The citizen cannot complain because he has voluntarily submitted himself to such a form of government. He owes allegiance to the two departments, so to speak, and within their respective spheres," that's a jurisdictional statement, "must pay the penalties with each, which each exacts for disobedience to its laws. In return, he can demand protection from each within its own jurisdiction," end quote. So what this is saying is that whatever someone is charged with, there are two questions that have to be evidenced before anything can proceed. The first is personam jurisdiction. Are you a citizen of one of the several states of America, united in a perpetual union with constitutional rights? Or are you a citizen of the United States, subject to the United States? Which are you? That has to be evidenced, not just asserted. It has to be evidenced on the record. The second is the land that this alleged crime took place, is it the land of one of the states of America, united in perpetual union, or is it land of the United States at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17? Is it a state of the United States? Which is it? That has to be evidenced. And you don't allow the courts to move forward beyond that. And if they do, then you have deprivation of rights under color of law right there. They failed to establish jurisdiction. GW?
Yeah, I'm here.
I mean,
I'm here.
Anything, any feedback on that?
No, that's good. That's good.
Okay.
That's good. Somebody on the line should be muted out. Somebody's,
it's Nicholas. He's got background noise. His line is still unmuted. Anything else, Nicholas?
No, I think he answered it perfectly, and I really appreciate both of you and all the stuff you do. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir. And then Ed is back one more time. Go ahead, Ed.
Hey, I just wanted to thank GW for his answer to Nicholas. Cogent answer for a 71-year-old guy, too. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you. GW, thank you so much for joining us this evening. We look forward with bated breath for another month before we hear from you again. And, of course, if you have something to say that you'd like to share, don't hesitate to reach out to me, and we'll just plug you in on any of the Monday night calls that you want to do. Okay?
All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so very, very much. I didn't mean to cut you
everybody,
off, GW.
No, I was saying everybody stay well and be proactive about your health. And stay well. And
absolutely.
Yep.
Join us tomorrow night, Tuesday, with Brother John. as you learn how the direct application of correcting your political citizenship status is employed through the litigation process. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
Good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.